Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk Safety. I'm your host, Dylan Sutherland from Protector Safety Gear. Throughout this series, we'll be interviewing industry experts to provide our audience with valuable insights on various categories of PPE. Topics will range from selection and standards to maintenance and care. This should ultimately assist you in selecting fit-for-purpose safety solutions for your site. From these discussions, we will create resources such as Toolbox Talk downloads and blogs, all of which will be available on our website, www.protector.co.za, for download. Hi, and welcome back to Let's Talk Safety. For this episode, I'm glad to say we've got Rani Naidu, the Senior Application Engineer, Technical and Regulatory Manager for 3M in South Africa, back in the studio. Rani, thank you so much for giving us more of your time. I think for me, there's a great amount of value. I hope the audience gets the same.
Thank you for having me and glad to be back.
So we're going to stick on this similar conversation as to what we had last time where we spoke about respiratory. Today, I think we're going to touch a little bit more on the standards because we understood the fit for purpose. We understood a bit of what we need to consider when we're selecting the appropriate respiratory protection. But I think it goes a lot deeper than just saying, I need an FFP2 disposable or I need a half face mask. We need to understand what the requirements are from a standard point so that people can actually check and make sure that they're getting the proper fit for purpose respiratory protection when they're selecting it.
Absolutely. So I'm glad you bring that up because generally when we go out and see clients, they just go with the norm of what maybe the AIA that called on them said, like use an FFP1, 2, and 3. But do they actually understand the standards that actually comprise of developing those FFP1, 2, and 3 standards? So if we look at respiratory protection as a whole, each category is categorized by a protection level that's required for each product or piece of equipment. And when we talk about the standards, there are different standards applicable to your disposable respirators, for your reusable respirators, as well as your powered and supplied air. Understanding those standards is critically important because they do not overlap. They each have their own criteria.
Fantastic. So I think before we get into the technical talk, I think for me what stood out was I was doing a bit of research and I came across another lawsuit. Last time we spoke about the silicosis lawsuit, talking about inappropriately protecting somebody. I've come across a lawsuit that happened in America with a company called Philips, and basically they are providing solutions for sleep apnea and and it's not in safety. It's not a safety equipment. But I think the principles that struck me is something that any of the audience should gain value from. Essentially, what happened in the situation is they provide a piece of equipment which allows the user to connect to it in the evening, sleep properly. But something was not right in the equipment. So let me just paint the picture. We spoke about the silicosis lawsuit. I think it ended up being, it was 5 billion rand lawsuit that ended up happening in South Africa. This lawsuit, which has now kind of been finalized in April 2024, was up to 20 billion rand lawsuit. More than 500 people died. And I think there was over 85,000 people that were claimants on it. Now, again, it's not PPE, I understand that, but the fundamentals for me are there's a component of this system or this item which allowed for somebody to get affected and fatally so in some cases. The ones that weren't fatal ended up basically getting cancer and serious disease. Now, it made me ask the question because one component released the wrong particle or substance or whatever it was. Does that link to the standard? Should there have been a standard of this product that if it was manufactured to that standard, this could not have happened?
100%. So as with anything, so you, even if you had to go and buy a microwave oven, for instance, it should be SABS approved, meaning it's gone through all the checks and balances. Because remember, even when we import stuff, the electrical components are how many volts that passes through the equipment varies from country to country. So simple things like that should be taken into consideration when developing the standards for country. So if you look at respiratory protection, and yes, although it's not PPE in the Philips lawsuit, it is a component of respiratory protection. So if you look at the OSHA's analysis benefits, it predicts that the standards will actually prevent many deaths from happening. It will also make sure that the people wearing the respiratory product are wearing it under the premise that it is going to protect them from any kind of harm to their lungs or internal organs or body parts, whatever it may be. So yes, there is a very good correlation between the standard and a product meeting that standard in terms of preventing serious injury, death, or ill health.
And would I be right in saying, in this case, if the standard was adhered to, the product that was, that this item was made of, would not have been able to inflict severe damages as in this situation?
Absolutely. So when we started the conversation, we spoke about homologation. So when you tie homologation into the standards, yes, our product meets international standard regulations, but does it meet the local regulations as well? That's where homologation comes into process. So remembering the example I gave you of the microwave oven, a product may be great internationally, but there may be challenges in your local country. There may be a few items that are available internationally that are not available in South Africa. So by homologating the product, we ensure that besides having international compliance, we also meet the country standards. And that for me is critically important.
Fantastic. When we start shifting this over to respiratory, because all that happened when I read through this case was, it made me think of PPE, respiratory protection, for instance, in a fast-forwarded kind of situation, because this sleep apnea machine would be feeding or making sure that you breathe properly when you sleep. And you're connected to it probably 8 hours every evening, and it's kind of forcing whatever the dangerous particle is that has now caused the disease and death. So I think we need to get into the different standards, and what we hope to do with this episode is create a really valuable toolbox talk where we can then have each of the standards, each of the EN standards that we need to, that we as South Africa basically are aligned to, and ensure that that is in a really easy to consume format that anybody on site, any of the audience that might be selecting the appropriate respiratory protection in this case, can just use that one pager and say, this is the standard that it needs to. They can then look at their product and make sure, does it meet those standards that are then discussed today?
Absolutely. So when we look at the respiratory standards, they basically do tie into one another. So for instance, when you send a product in to get homologated, or if you're sending it for international testing, there are criteria that it's tested against. So besides checking the obvious, which is the filter media itself and its capabilities, there are other things that are also you need to consider. For instance, if we look at just a disposable respirator, for instance, we're looking at products that are a single shift use. So when people say it's a single shift use, I would challenge them to interrogate where the testing took place, how was it tested, and if possible, get their hands on a test report to see what were the outcomes. because I can say my product is tested and it's going to last the 8-hour shift. But then you might have a product like a 3M product where in some instances a disposable respirator could last up to 12 hours or even longer. So most companies would say it'll last a shift. You need to determine what is the length of that shift. Is it the 8-hour shift or is it a 12-hour shift? Would it last a 15-hour shift? Because in a workplace environment, there's no guarantee as to how long you're going to be using it. Maybe for some reason you are running late on a project and you may have to work longer hours to complete it. So will the person need to change out? Do they understand the change out schedule? Do they have a change out schedule to replace that? Then when we look at the reusable respirators, again, your cartridges, what has that been homologated against or what has it been tested against? And are the chemicals that it's being tested against compliant with current regulations of what you're using? Do people understand that there are different levels of exposure? And most instances when I do visit some sites, people using chemical cartridges, for instance, don't have a particle filter on it. So just because you're being exposed to a chemical doesn't mean that there's no particle that can affect your respiratory tract as well.
And I think, I mean, you talk about the particle filter, and we'll get into that as a standard itself. But from my side, I've always just thought a particle filter being something that I could probably see that causes damage to the cartridge or enters the cartridge. Is that the case? I mean, welding, for instance, welding, you can't necessarily see what's going on. Would you need a particle filter if you're doing a welding exercise?
Absolutely. So welding is one of the sneaky ones because whenever I, again, go onto sites, most guys doing welding think they are the mavericks of the world and they will not wear a respirator because the assumption is that when I've got my welding shield on, it's protecting me from fume. But it isn't. You are being exposed to the ozone produced from the welding. You should be wearing a particle filter. At least a FFP2 and higher if possible. And you should be having some kind of carbon layering within the respirator as well to help protect against the ozone. So welding fume is carcinogenic. So you should definitely be wearing respiratory protection under your welding shield.
Cool. So I'm going to ask that we take a step back and let's talk about them because you've mentioned the disposable, you've mentioned the reusable, you've mentioned the cartridges. Each of those are classified and certified to its own EN standard. As you've mentioned, there is probably a bit of overlap. Maybe let's break it down as the standard. So we've got EN 149 that has 149 as the standard plus A1, which is an addition to the standard. What is that EN 149? Can you just explain to us in simple terms what is classified there?
I'd like to be able to say that it's easy to explain, but it really isn't. It's a very complex standard because there are various components to the standard. But the basic thing is, so your most companies, they have their disposable respiratory. So most manufacturers do comply to the EN149 standard. So it's the EN149-2001 standard. But there has been an amendment to that, which is the EN149 plus A1-2009. So basic thing to explain between the two. So if you go to the 2001 standard, they did not take into consideration testing using dolomite. The 2009 standard includes the testing against dolomite. So to give you a simple explanation of that, dolomite is ground into a very fine powder and it's blast forced into the respiratory product through the filter media. And then they check the loading capacity. So how much of this dolomite actually loaded onto the face piece itself. So that's one of the components in the testing process of the EN standard. So it's really not easy to say that we can give you a quick synopsis of what the EN 149 standard encompasses, because there's a lot of different criteria that make up the standard. So we could put together a quick checklist of what you need to look at, but every manufacturer will comply to most, not all. So you should be looking at test reports to see that it is fully compliant to the current 2009 standard.
And in that, I mean, that's a critical assessment that should be done. If you're saying that it's only in this instance complies to one or two or some of the factors, what are the tests? I'm assuming that it's the test that it doesn't adhere to or hasn't passed or hasn't been subjected to. Is the test report the only way to figure out that it hasn't been tested to that specific criteria?
So yes, you should actually, well, every product that goes through for testing we'll give you the test report, but some companies and 3M as well, we don't like to actually share the actual test report because that has some intellectual property information in it. So we don't want that out in the marketplace. So we would normally send our products to an external auditing company such as BSI. So they're an international test house accredited. So we can share the BSI certification to say our products have gone through the testing, they've passed all of the criteria, and it's been certified as such. So if the test report isn't available, then ask for the external BSI or other accredited body certification to make sure that your product actually conforms to the regulation.
Okay, and that's general across the board, so it's mm-hmm. not to a specific standard. That is something we can ask for if we don't have, if we can't get the test result, a BSI or a third party report should be able to, an accredited third party report would be able to give the confirmation that these are the standards that were achieved.
100%. Because even if we go back to the homologation question, so what South Africa does is that we actually take the EN standards or any certification that the product has passed, and we basically adopt it, and then we create the homologation certification. So again, if you were to phone me and say, I need confirmation that product X of yours conforms to the regulation and to all of the standards, I could give you that homologation certificate, because we don't just issue a certificate for any reason. It has to go through a testing process with the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. So we've got to submit a technical file. In that technical file, it will have all of the test reports, all of the external testing done by companies like BSI. And then we would also send through a sample which gets tested by the SABS. And based on that, the homologation certification is issued. So if I were to just give you the homologation certificate, you can rest assured that this product actually conforms.
And just to be clear, the homologation happens when something is basically certified to the EN standard and then brought into South Africa to adhere to the South African adoption of that standard.
Absolutely.
Okay. So back onto that 149, I don't know how the people on site do it, because I think there's so many standards across mm-hmm. the board. I'm fairly comfortable with the work at heart side of things. Looking at all these different standards, I mean, it can easily cause confusion. The 149 plus the A1, which was obviously then updated in 2009, is that specific to a disposable, or is it touching on disposable and reusable masks? Where does it sit, the 149?
Okay, so that's where I said there is the crossover. Yeah. So it actually has to do with the filter media itself. So if you look at a disposable respirator, the entire product is filter media.
Yeah.
But it also crosses over into your reusable. So if I may just point out, like, for instance, on this filter, it's got filter media on it right now. So
any component that would be attached to a reusable that has filter media would be what gets certified to the 149 standard.
Absolutely. But it has an additional, because it also has to conform to adaptation to a face piece. So again, yes, it's a filter media, it's been tested, but it must be tested as a component. So when it's attached to the face piece, there's a different standard that becomes applicable.
But that wouldn't be the 149 then. So 149 is purely talking about, for a lack of a better word, the white piece that is basically seen on most filters. And that then, I would assume, talks about how much particles can flow through it, what kind of particles it can resist against, what kind of tests. You mentioned that not everything is achieved by all the 149 manufacturers, but give me an idea of that. You've mentioned dolomite. Dolomite's obviously added. What other testing factors get put into that 149 standard?
So there's stress tests that are done, for instance, on the straps. So there's a tensile test strength that's done to make sure that, you know, when it's pulled to a certain distance, that it doesn't snap, break, or like come off its hinges on one end, because in some disposable respirators, they are sonically welded. On others, you have staples on them. So again, staples. If it's in a hot environment, do the staples touch the skin? Will it burn the person because it's now heating up from the environmental humidity or heat? So that's one of the other tests that are done. If you're looking at the nose clip that's on the respirator, is it aluminium or stainless steel? Because if you're looking at aluminium, you cannot use that in underground mining. You know, aluminium components are allowed underground. So they would also check things like that. If it's an embedded product, they would test when it's flattened on the nose bridge. Does it retain its shape or does it start to flex because now it's not, you know, externally exposed and you can't press it really hard. The other things that are tested is the actual cup itself, you know. Is it collapsing on the person's face? Can it resist an 8-hour shift where it doesn't damage the circumference of the face piece? If you look at the printing on it, they even look at the boxes that it comes in, the packaging that it comes in, because there is now also the sustainability issue. So how are you disposing of the respirator? Are there any dangerous components within the respirator? Should you incinerate? So there's various components that have to comply in order to get that certification.
Okay. And that would all then sit in that standard, that 149 standard, specifically for a filter that gets used in a respiratory instance, basically. Yes.
That's besides the obvious ones where they talk about your, you know, the breathability, inhalation, exhalation, your leakage, your inward leakage, your outward leakage.
But how, I mean, all I'm thinking while you're saying this is that is a lot for the person on site that is deciding what respiratory to use. How do they make that decision? Because I can bet you now, not even 5% of people ask for the report.
Yes.
Or if they do ask for it, examine it to the extreme of, this is my site, this is what I need to make sure this specific mask actually protects against. How do we make that simpler for the audience? Because that's what we want to do. We want fit for purpose safety. We want people to make a good decision. You make that by having valuable insight, which is why we've got you here. How do they make a better decision with this?
The quickest and easiest is to make sure that you are using a reputable company who supplies you with a reputable brand.
The problem is everybody's reputable. If depending on where you work, everybody claims to be in their mind reputable, and that's always difficult to break through. I mean, unfortunately, until something goes wrong, people are reputable or seen as such.
Absolutely. So the certification. So first of all, deal with a company that you know, that has a good footprint in country, that can give you the backup in terms of technical support. If you don't have access to that, then your next point of contact would be to make sure that the person supplying you with the product also has the ability to give you the necessary homologation certifications, the EN standards regulation certification coming from the external auditing body. And if the person is getting that, then they should be getting a product that has been vetted, that has gone through all the checks and balances. If the person can't produce the certifications and they can't give you a data sheet for their product, then you need to interrogate, you know, is this really a product that I should be using? And quite honestly, it is very difficult for people to determine who is reputable, who isn't. So unfortunately, you're going to have to do some homework.
So we have to ask the question, and what should that look? Because, I mean, if we think about a mask, I shouldn't be able to sell a mask before it's got the appropriate homologation and certification completed. That makes sense, because how do I know it's going to perform the function without having the appropriate certification, right?
Correct.
So that turnaround shouldn't take too long then. If a person that's listening wants to check and make sure that they've got the proper respiratory protection, what kind of time frame should they give the supplier to give them that document?
It should be immediate, because the homologation is issued before you allow to import the product. So the other option would be to actually just go on to the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications website. And then they have a database there of approved products. If you see the product in that listing, then by all means, go ahead, purchase it, because it's gone through the homologation. So they may not give you the physical certification, but you'll be able to see it's gone through that process.
And is that quite current?
Unfortunately not. I think the latest one was updated in 2013.
Okay. Yeah. So that makes it a bit tricky.
It is. And also, you know, post-COVID, there's a lot of products there that need to be removed because they were brought in as an interim measure. But it is the only source we have at the moment.
So other than going directly to the OEM and asking for the appropriate documentation. Thank you for joining us, and I hope this episode added value to you. If you are experiencing any safety challenges on your sites and require any additional information, please do leave us a message on LinkedIn via Protector Safety Gears page, or alternatively, follow the link below and share a message with us, because maybe it can create value or valuable conversation for future episodes. Be sure to also follow us on LinkedIn. There will be some valuable information shared from today's discussion.